going from a 4,000 square foot house to a 1,000 square foot apartment in a senior community is hard for a lot of people. They don't know where to start.
Welcome to Absolute Trust Talk with your host, Kirsten Howe. Absolute Trust Talk brings you tips, tools, advice, and interviews to help you build a reliable knowledge base on estate planning, business, and finance to start preparing for your future today.
Hello and welcome to Absolute Trust Talk. I am your host, Kirsten Howe, and I'm very glad to have you here today. My guest, Meg Cannell, is an estate organizer. So she helps all kinds of people organize their stuff for all kinds of reasons. She shared some of her stories with me as we were preparing for this recording. Yes, believe it or not, we actually do prepare for these things. And some of the things she has found in people's homes are just interesting, mortifying. You know, think about it. If you died on the way home from work today, somebody would have to pick through your stuff. Just think about that. And so she's going to be sharing some of these stories with us, I'm sure. It'll be fascinating. My guest today is Meg Cannell. Her company is called The Organized One, and they are an estate and residential organizing firm. Meg established the company in 1997, so she has over 20 years of experience in organizing. She also has a degree in interior design and architecture, which I imagine helps her quite a bit in her work with The Organized One. Her company is actually a team of professionals, and they work with trustees, fiduciaries, bank trust officers, estate planning attorneys, and the heirs to manage the personal tangible property in an estate. That is a fancy way of saying the stuff. They help the family sort through, organize. They coordinate distributing the property. They oversee packaging it and shipping it off if that needs to happen. They help with locating important items or documents. They get things sold, they get things donated, anything that needs to happen to clear out the estate, they can do it, or they can help you find out somebody who can do it. Meg has been a presenter to the Professional Fiduciary Association of California and the East Bay Trust and Estates Lawyers, and also the East Bay Estate Planning Council. And she's also a member of the Professional Fiduciary Association of California and two estate planning councils, the East Bay chapter and my own chapter, the Diablo Valley chapter. So now I invite you to welcome my guest, Meg Cannell. Welcome, Meg. I'm so glad to have you here today.
Thanks, Kirsten. It's great to be here. I'm pleased to talk with Absolute Trust Talk about The Organized One, Estate Organizing Services.
Great. Well, why don't we start with you describing what it is that you do?
We are a team of organizers who assist estate planning attorneys, trustees, bank trust officers, fiduciaries, and family members in handling the personal tangible property items of an estate by working hands-on in the home, sorting, organizing, purging, helping them sell, helping them decide what to keep, maybe finding items that are bequeathed and they can't find, and then helping with the distribution of that.
Okay. But do you also sometimes work actually with the living people who live in the house and just need some help?
We do. And there's a little inside joke that we use. We have live clients and dead clients. So the ones I just talked about were the dead ones. However, the live clients we love to serve are usually folks that have lost their partner and or are trying to get organized to have their trusts written or trusts updated. And they don't know what type of finances they have. They don't know what all their assets are. These are the ones that are updating their trusts. So we will go in and help them organize and itemize and inventory what they have to bring to your appointment. The other folks, if they've lost a partner or are a trustee or an executor of estate and they need to do the administration of the estate, we can help them with the paperwork on site, filing with the different companies and making the phone calls that they need to make to keep things rolling so they can do their distributions and close down the estate.
Okay, so not just organizing tangible items, you also help people maybe get their files organized so they even know what bank accounts they have, or helping them with documents too, not just tchotchkes.
That's correct.
And I don't mean to diminish it by calling it tchotchkes.
Oh, people love their tchotchkes.
Oh, yes.
They do love their, they have collections and collections of tchotchkes. But yes, we do work with the paper. We really, I like the paper. It's fun for me. It's interesting. One example, we just had a client and they weren't exactly sure on their trust plan. So their attorney asked them to make an inventory of all the bank accounts they had. It ended up being 32 bank accounts.
Oh, that's a record in my office, I would think.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure.
Yes. They liked one part of that partnership, liked to move a lot of money around. And so he would take $100,000 and open up a new account, and take another $100,000 and open up this other new account, and in it made the accounting really hard.
Oh yeah, wow. Well, in the old days, banks would give incentivization to open a new account. Like, open an account, we'll give you a free toaster. So I have clients who have these miscellaneous little accounts with like $50 in them that they haven't touched forever.
Yes. I've seen the same thing, however, on this particular client.
That was a different deal.
That was a different deal. There was a, yeah. That was, and I don't think they got toasters.
No. Okay, so you help people who need help being organized for whatever reason. I'm guessing also that that would come into play if somebody is wanting to, as many of my clients do, downsize.
That's true. A lot of the clients that we have served are working on that next chapter in their life where they're closing the book on the house they raised their children in, the house they had their last major career in. And they're looking for a simpler life and usually smaller property to manage as their energy diminishes, their attention to detail diminishes. And going from a 4,000 square foot house to a 1,000 square foot apartment in a senior community is hard for a lot of people. They don't know where to start.
Yeah, that's a big daunting task.
It is a big task. Usually what we do when we come in is we will interview them. We will go to the new place and take some dimensions and do up a floor plan, and then go back and talk to them about what they were thinking about taking and give them the real lowdown, whether it's going to fit or not, whether it's going to work with what their ideas are of how they're going to live in that new space. And we pare it down and help them find homes for all their other stuff.
I think that's a real valuable service. Rather than moving everything over to the new place and kind of scratching your head, oh, how are we going to make all this fit? Have a plan.
Right. Have a plan. I always encourage them to give things away while people are alive. They never realize how much people are grateful for these gifts, and they get to experience the gratitude. And it does bring people closer together when they know that they've been thought of. And they don't have to wait until the person has passed away to receive grandma's gold charm bracelet or, you know, the buffet in the dining room that was used for 40 Thanksgivings
and
things like that. Now, on the flip side of that, the styles have changed, right?
Oh, right.
Mid-century is really popular right now. And
right.
I'll tell you, 10 or 15 years ago when I was in this business, we were throwing
that
furniture away.
You couldn't get rid of it. Yeah.
So now it's any other brown furniture is not desirable. And the generations that are set to receive some of the stuff, they don't want it.
Right. So my house that's full of antiques, my kids aren't going to want that stuff.
Right.
I'm guessing.
Right. Yeah. Now, are any of those antiques from your family, or are they ones you collected?
The latter. They're ones that I sought out and purchased myself.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're not heirloom, not family heirlooms.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, if there's one or two pieces that are somewhat small and mean a lot to you, you might be able to maybe hold on to those until the end, and then maybe...
Well, maybe styles will change by the time I go, I hope.
Right? If you hang on long enough. I always think, boy, if I had a huge warehouse and I could store all these antiques for another 40 years...
Until they come back into style.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
But that's a big if.
And that this is not reasonable.
You're not in the furniture storage business.
I am not. No.
Oh, right. So you help people organize, pare down. I can imagine that there would be a big demand for your help when we have... I have a lot of times I have clients who actually live someplace else. You know, the parent lives here. the child lives on the East Coast, and now the child is responsible for administering the estate. And how is the child going to clear out that house when they live 3,000 miles away?
That happens a lot, and more than most people realize. Usually the client, who is the child, will come out and handle some paperwork, go through the property, and we usually try and meet them when they're in town and do a walkthrough with them and take pictures, make notes, and continue to talk with them over the phone about the process, about what they want to do. We also help them make decisions on what they can do with the items. Most of the time, people don't know what they're going to do.
Right.
They're stuck with the stuff. They have no ideas. They weren't told what they should do with it.
Right.
And we have to have a conversation with them about, you know, well, what's your lifestyle? Would this add to your lifestyle? Is this something that you want to give to your children? Do you want to hold on to it for a little while? One thing that comes to mind is beautiful sets of china.
Oh.
Beautiful sets of china that everybody in my era had on their wedding
Everyone
gift register.
Had one. Yep.
Right? And everybody has these huge sets of china, which were not inexpensive.
Right.
And people don't entertain that way today.
Right.
They don't entertain with china. They don't like to store the china. And I tell them it's okay to let go of the china. If it's not serving you, if it's not going to serve your children in 30 or 40 years when you want to pass it off, it's really okay to let it go and encourage them to take a picture.
Oh, yeah. So you have the memory of it.
Right.
But you don't have the burden of it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was talking to a friend of mine very recently, and she said, I'm basically the only granddaughter in my family, and I have three sets of china and a fourth one on its way.
Oh, I feel for
her. She says, I never use it.
I feel for her.
Yeah.
You know, I do encourage the families that have boys in them to think about their futures. Like, is this something that you want to give to your son? Maybe in the future when they perhaps partner up with someone, they might want it going forward. And the same goes with jewelry. I hear this a lot,
oh, yeah.
which is the girls in the family usually think that all the jewelry should
come
to them.
Right.
And I don't agree with that.
As the mother of a boy.
As the mother of a boy. And the daughter of... My dad had no sisters, let's just say that.
Oh, okay.
So he and his brothers got his mother's jewelry. And I got grandmother's jewelry, yeah. which I would have never gotten on the paternal side if right. there was some sisters involved.
Right.
So I do coach families that, you know you think that the girls should all get it, but your brother may be married someday and he may want to give it to a future partner or a future daughter.
Right. Yeah. That's a really good point. My mother-in-law gave me a number of pieces of jewelry while she was alive, which she still is. But anyway, and it was very nice. It was very sweet. She didn't have any daughters, and it was just a nice thing for her to give things like that to her daughters-in-law.
Right. And it's something you can pass down to your sons.
Right. to do the exact same thing.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Okay. So talk about how the process works when you're trying to clear out, organize a home where the occupant has passed away. What all do you need to do?
The first thing we do is an intake phone call. And that takes about a half an hour. When we ask a lot of questions about the decedent, the heirs, who the trustee or the executor is, who has authority to work with us. And then we also ask for a copy of the document because we want to read the document. We want to know that we are executing correctly a legal document.
Right.
So we ask for the document. We usually then ask for a retainer, and then we set up an appointment, and we have them sign an agreement. Once that's done, we do a walkthrough with the family and or the executor or trustee if it's not a family member. And we talk about anything that's in the house that was mentioned in the document, and have we identified it? Yes, this is that. This is that chair. This is that painting. The jewelry, it's in the safe deposit box. So we'll go there maybe and look at the stuff. And we always want to document that we've found these things.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a game plan going from that first walkthrough of what we're actually going to be doing. So let's just say a family has to distribute to five different family members who are located all over the United States and the properties here in Oakland. We've already done the interview, the walkthrough, and gotten a scope of work of how we're going to handle this. If we know that the rest of the items are to be sold, then we will immediately secure the items that are to be distributed, and we will get them shipped out through different vendors that we use. One thing people don't realize is that shipping small lots of items across the United States is as expensive as shipping a one-bedroom apartment usually across the United States.
Really?
It's really expensive to ship a dresser, a chair, and a painting. It's anywhere from $500 to $1,000.
Wow.
Right?
It's got to be valuable if you're going to spend that much money to ship it.
Value is all in the eye of the beholder.
That's true. Yeah, there's sentimental value.
There's sentimental value. I recently was working on a project where we created every piece of artwork, even if it was a poster. And creating is $150 per piece.
Oh.
So it was all sentimental to them, and they really
were willing to pay for it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we do the walkthrough, we start working on the project, we'll do the distributions, we start sorting through the property, which means we go through every drawer, every pocket, every crevice, we put our hands on everything.
You never know what you're going to find in a pocket.
Yeah, or on a lapel pin. We've found many, many brooches and pins and lovely jewelry. Pinned to clothing. So if you're going to distribute the items among different people and they get to pick things out, we like to come in before then and bring everything up to the top because everything's kind of shoved down and back.
Right.
Yeah. In a way. If there's appraisals that are needed, we also like to come in before then because let's just say the whole set of sterling flatware is really, really hidden way in the back of a closet and the families all come through and they've picked everything out and it's supposed to be equalized, meaning everyone's supposed to get an equal share. So the value of these items are all added up and it's all equalized on the bottom line. But all of a sudden, this $1,000 plus item pops up and somebody wants it, but we don't have an appraisal on it. That means the appraiser has to come back.
Right.
Yeah. It's an extra expense for the estate. So we like to get everything up before the appraiser comes. We also like to get the family through before the appraiser comes because if we know that they only want five things,
let's not appraise the rest of them.
Right. If you don't need the appraisal for the entire estate, let's just appraise what we're equalizing.
Right. Yeah.
But I do explain that to them very clearly. Like, you can't add on that $300,000 painting, or we think the $300,000 painting that wasn't appraised after the appraiser.
Right.
You have to pay for an appraisal again. So there's a lot of education to happen on how to do this equitable, fair, and with the least amount of money spent.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Okay. So how much does it cost? How do you bill for your work?
We bill on an hourly basis. We are asked all the time if we can do estimates, and I would love to do an estimate. However, the scope of our work changes as the discovery happens.
Yeah. Every time you go into the house, something different
comes up or pops up. I mean, we've been on projects where we've uncovered extremely hazardous material and we've had to evacuate the property for a while.
Right.
And then we come across things that people want shipped across the United States and it's a very difficult thing to ship. We have a lot of time. We have to work with different shippers. So we never know.
You just can't predict it.
We can't predict what it is. Yeah.
That makes sense to me. Okay. And so when the family decides, we've picked out what we want to keep, and now we're just going to get rid of the rest, you help them if an estate sale is appropriate?
Sure. The first thing I do ask is, what do they want to do with the rest? And also, does the document define what they have to do with the rest?
Right.
If they really need to liquidate the entire property and those assets then go into an account that's split, then we have to do everything we can to sell what's left.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple different ways to do that. We do suggest estate sales if the family's open to it, but there's a number of variables that have to happen to have an estate sale. First and foremost, the house has to be in an area that is an estate sale is allowed.
Oh,
so condos usually don't allow estate sales, or sometimes townhomes don't allow gated properties.
I didn't know that.
Like Rossmore.
You can't have an estate sale in Rossmore?
You can have an estate sale in Rossmore. It's very complicated to do.
Oh, okay. You have to follow the rules.
You have to follow the rules, and you have to I believe, give the names of everyone you think is coming to the sale to the front gate to get them in. So it's very complicated to do that there.
That's not really an estate sale.
No, it's not an estate sale. However, there was enough people in Rossmore to go to an estate sale.
That's right. You don't need outsiders.
Right. So you could do an estate sale. If the property doesn't support an estate sale, or let's just say that it's on a road where there's no parking, that's also not a good place to have an estate sale.
Sure.
Or the property is in ill repair, so bringing anybody on would be a liability to
the family.
The family. Yeah. We will suggest that they don't do that. So there's a couple other ways to go. You can do an estate buyout, which is happening less and less these days.
What does that mean?
An estate buyout is when an estate sale company or dealer will come in and buy the majority of what you have. Now, some of them will offer you a set price for what they see in the house, which will include removing the rest of the items that they don't want. What they do with those items, we don't know. Some of them actually end up do selling them at the flea market, but they're not going to pay you for them because it's not worth their time to pay for them. Or some of them will go to donations. And sometimes people take that stuff straight to the dump, which is kind of a shame because we really do like to keep things out of the landfill.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's an estate sale buyout.
Okay.
Okay, so that you have one person, but I'm... In the last couple of years, more and more of the folks that were doing that are not doing it anymore. So it's not as much of an option. And they don't want to have to store it. A lot of them don't want to pay the storage fees to store that in between their sales. The other option is to have dealers come in and do a buy of the certain items that they're interested in. We have a whole list of dealers that we work with. And we will facilitate that for the family and meet those dealers and, you know, try and work with these buyers to get the most money for the family as possible. But you always have to weigh that out against the cost of having us there.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. So there's always, we're always looking at the bottom line. But if the estate says that you need to try and liquidate everything and you can't have an estate sale there, somebody's got to be there.
Right.
So it is the cost of the administration to get that done. The other options are if we notice there are items in there that seem to be of high value. And I'll just say with a little caveat that we're around stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we constantly check in with our estate sale vendors and local auction houses. And we do research on eBay as well. When we see something we think has some value, we will look it up and do a little research online and call the auction house if need be and send them a photo and say, is this something we should be putting? You know, what do you think this will bring in auction? If the freight to get it over there is less than
What you might get,
then we send it. If it's not, then we will tell them, you know, donate it. It's not worth it. At the end of the day, the bottom line is you're going to be in the negative. So that's the other option. But we have had clients where they have donated the entire house.
Oh, okay.
So what we do then is we sort stuff out per the different organizations that will take donations.
What their criteria
exactly
are.
And that changes all the time.
Oh,
there are people that will take office supplies 1 week and next month they're not.
Oh.
And there are people that'll take beautiful upholstered furniture in pristine condition and then they're full and they won't take
any furniture.
Right. Yeah. So we're always keeping abreast of where things are open, who's taking what, and it does change daily. So we do have to check in when we're about ready to donate stuff.
Okay. So if the client doesn't have a favorite charity, you can help them with, okay, these people are likely to be able to take what you have.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. The favorite charity usually can't take.
Right. They have to be a pretty big charity that's set up for receiving stuff.
Right. Yeah. So I'm going to put a plug in for the White Elephant Sale, which is Oakland Museum's main fundraiser.
One of my favorite things.
I know. I love that sale. They will come out and pick up certain items. So, they do have on their website what they'll pick up and what they won't pick up. But we usually will separate it out and pack it up for them so it's ready to go when they come to pick up.
Okay.
Because we don't want to waste their time. We don't want to waste our time.
Yeah.
We also use, I'm going to put a plug in for the East Bay Depot for creative reuse.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Have you ever heard of that?
I have. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a secondhand store that sells used or hardly used or half used art supplies to teachers and the general public.
Yeah.
And so a lot of things that we had been not finding a place for, we have found a place with them, like silk flowers or You know, art supplies.
Anything that could be used in an art project.
Anything that can be used in an art project. Any art supplies, even if they're half used, can get reused
there. Sure.
Oh, yeah. Love that.
Yeah, yeah.
They will take housewares, too, once in a while.
Okay.
So we work with them when we have something like that.
Okay. Interesting. All right. So you are a good resource for those kinds of things. Okay. So I'm thinking that sometimes you go into a place and it's just horrific. Packed to the rafters, the kinds of things we see on television, I guess, on those hoarder shows. Not that I watch them, but I hear. So talk about the process that you have to go through there.
That's funny. I thought you were going to say I'm asking for a friend, which is which is code for it's me.
No, I am not a hoarder. I am not the neatest person in the world, but I'm not a hoarder.
Oh, that's good to hear. That's really good to hear. You know, hoarding, unfortunately, is a mental health issue, right?
Yeah.
So what we do say is, when people ask, do we work with hoarders? I say, yes, only if they're dead or conserved.
Oh.
So it's a mental health issue. They do need somebody who has some type of mental health background working with them if they're going to be staying in their home.
You don't want to have to deal with them and convince them every day to let you in the door.
Right. That's not our skill set.
Right. Yeah. Right, right, right.
So we do and have served many deceased hoarders. And yes, it can be quite a shock when you go in the house. And usually, and I'll be really frank about it, when you usually have a house like that and it's packed to the gills, it's usually packed to the gills with live creatures as well.
Oh, yeah.
So rats and...
Yeah.
We've had houses where there was families of skunks living under the house and raccoons living in the house. So there's a level where we call in a hazmat team.
Sure.
So yeah. Depending on what they're looking for in the house... And what we can see in the house defines how we will approach it. So, for instance, we had a property once that was full. It did have some live creatures in it, which we always have people address that first for our own health reasons.
Sure.
And once we got in there and started sorting through the stuff, we probably found, 500 to 600 EE savings bonds from the 1960s.
Ooh.
Right. And each one of them was $500.
Oh, that's a lot of money.
That was a lot of money. So I think we calculated each savings bonds was worth $4,000 or something. It was massive amounts of money, but it was just hidden.
You had to pick through.
We had to pick through, and it was hidden in this property. So once we found that, we knew it was really worth going through it.
Right.
Another property we did, a woman really liked doing, she had retired from her job and she liked doing the flea market circuit. And so her thing was to sort through other people's stuff and buy it and store it. And I don't really know how often she got to the flea market. So her houses were like, and there was more than one, were like a storage unit.
Oh.
And again, there were animals living in there. And the family really felt that there was things of value in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the end of the day, I'm not sure.
You didn't really see anything.
We had a couple of estate sales. I don't know what the actual bottom line profit was at the end of them. We hadn't gotten that information yet. But, you know, that's a point where they spent a lot of time looking through for things that weren't there.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I think if we were halfway through one of those projects, but it's their prerogative.
Yeah, ultimately the client decides.
The client decides.
And you'll keep soldiering on if that's what they want.
Right, right.
But your advice perhaps would have been, maybe we should just call this off.
Right.
At some point.
Right. But the family didn't want to.
Yeah.
And so it was their prerogative. You know, everybody has a relationship to stuff. And
yeah.
It's interesting to see how different people play that out in their lives.
Uh-huh.
On what's important to them. You know, we do always really try to have a really serious one-to-one talk with people about their choice.
Mm-hmm.
And we do accept their choice. If they want to continue doing that, then they are going to get X less at the end of the day.
Right.
Is that okay with them?
Right.
And
as long as they understand and they make the choice, then... That's the way it goes. Yeah.
Right. One of the other things I always call it having, you know, the come to Jesus talk, which is if somebody is really upset that they didn't get something that they thought they were supposed to get, like their parent told them they were going to get like the yellow pie plate and it got left to the sister and not them. You know, we just try and have compassion about the fact that, yeah, I'm really sorry that you're not getting that. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, but mom said, well, I believe you. I really do. Unfortunately.
What's in writing?
Yeah, it's what's in writing. I mean, if usually in these situations, the siblings aren't talking and there's no way to negotiate that.
You can't compromise.
Yeah. Right. So we just tell them, we're really sorry, but we have to follow the document.
Right. Okay. So I have to just ask you, what's the craziest thing or the most shocking thing that you found in a house?
Oh, my goodness. How much time do we have?
Okay, pick three of the craziest.
I'll start. One thing just popped in my mind was one of the saddest things was we found dead iguana in somebody's house in their iguana cage because they
just were neglected.
They couldn't get to it. They had so much stuff in front of it, they couldn't get to the iguana anymore. And it was the kid's iguana. There were kids living in the house.
Oh.
I know. That was really sad. We got very sad about that.
Well, you think of hoarders as little old ladies, but this was a mother or father situation.
Right.
With kids.
It was a mother. Yeah. It was a single parent situation. And the single parent was actually a pretty educated professional.
So behind closed doors.
Right.
Kind of.
You just don't know
crazy
what's going
town.
On in people's houses. So that's one of the saddest things I think we found because I felt bad for the kids.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So crazy things. Well, one time we found a whole roll of Krugerrands.
Oh.
And if people don't know what those are, they're gold coins. Each one is a troy ounce, and they're pure. So each one was the value of what gold per ounce was per day. So it was like $1,400 per coin.
Oh, wow.
And they're about in between quarters and dollar sizes.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, that was a great find. They were on the floor in a closet underneath a blanket, like not really even in a good hiding place.
Right.
They were like, I dropped my roll of Krugerrands right here.
Just fell out of my pants pocket.
Right. Probably what happened. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So that... We've found Civil War guns.
Oh.
Original voting ticket for Ulysses S. Grant. Original newspaper clippings for the murder of President Lincoln. Right. We found some.
Those are valuable.
They are valuable. They are. Yeah.
At least maybe to a museum.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
That happened. That particular one happened, 20 years ago, I think. Uh-huh. And we did get in touch with the Huntington, but I was off the project by the time those got sold. So I don't know where they went.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was very exciting. It was a gentleman had passed and he had inherited his mother's estate and his grandmother's estate. And he passed 20 years ago in his 90s. So, you know, if you can do the math, he had their scrapbooks.
Sure. 1865.
Right. So it was quite interesting. We've just found the most amazing things. One of the other things that we find all the time that we sometimes we'll talk about, but a lot of times we won't, is like...
I know where you're going with this. Go ahead.
Almost everybody has some type of pornography or sex toy or some thing in that realm.
Something in the nightstand they wouldn't want everybody else to see.
Right. And so like the old adage, you know, as your parents say, you know, make sure you're wearing clean underwear in case you get in an accident. It's like, make sure you throw away your pornography in case you get old. Someone's going to find it. And, you know, we handle that with tact and we'll usually gather it all up together and then we'll kind of quietly take, you know, the person who we think needs to hear it or the trustee, the one who can deal with it aside and say, you know, we kind of found this stuff over here and we were going to throw it away, but you know, it's really not our thing. We don't really have permission to throw it away, but if you'd like us to, we'll throw it away for you. And they're like, oh my God, you know,
that was my mother's.
Right. Right.
That is kind of a delicate thing. I would think.
Yeah.
Too. Well, especially in a parent child context.
Yes. Nobody wants to see that their parents had sex. I mean,
no. Right? No.
Right.
More than once, anyway.
Right.
Oh, thank you for sharing that.
It's funny because we do see stuff, everything from their birth certificate to their death certificate and everything in between, unless they were first generation immigrant or they had a fire, which in our area, unfortunately, is common.
Yeah, yeah.
So you do see all their traffic tickets, all the degrees they got, the lost loves that they had from love letters.
Oh, yeah.
You know, their time in the war. It's fascinating. It's an archaeological dig of somebody's family.
Right.
And we honor that. That's something special. We know it's an honor to be able to do and close up somebody's life. But it's interesting. And I know, like, I would love to meet these people. And it's, you know, I always think, well, you know, if there is an afterlife, I'm going to look up all these folks and...
Oh, yeah.
And have a cocktail with them and just say, yeah, that was a great life, wasn't it?
Very nice.
One of the things I'll add is a lot of times we do assist families in helping them do the distribution. When folks are working with their trust attorneys, I always encourage anybody I know who's going into an appointment to talk about the personal tangible property. Have a plan for it. Because what happens at the end is... people are grieving, they're having to deal with the loss, and then they're having to deal with some kind of hard paperwork sometimes in managing accounts, closing accounts, distributing accounts, and then you add on the personal property and then the personal relationships that are left behind. And if there's no direct plan for the personal property, and there was any uncomfortable feelings between family members, it just magnifies it 100%.
Sure. Yeah.
It's kind of like when, you know, when somebody dies, I always say it's game over. That's it. And whatever the survivors didn't get from that parent, whether it was stuff or love or attention, they're going to try, if they're really angry about it, to get it in this last...
by lashing out or causing trouble.
Causing trouble or getting, you know, mom gave that to you, but, you know... I think I deserve it, you know, because I didn't get the love from mom. So I really want that, even though they probably don't really want it. What they really want is the love,
From the mom. Yeah. Yeah. And they may not be able to even access that. They may not be able to say that.
Right.
You know, like, but not be aware of it. Are there plans for the tangible items that you've seen work very effectively to avoid that kind of conflict?
I always think that if the parents are realistic about the dynamics of the family, then there are many different plans that work. If they know that the kids have problems getting along, then the more specific, down to the nitty-gritty, they should be. I always say it's always best to give away before you pass.
Right.
Again, to experience the gratitude.
The joy of giving.
Joy. Yeah. But, you know, if folks need to hold on to stuff until the very end, it is a real disservice to their children to not... plan ahead on how the dynamics of the family works.
It's difficult, though, I think, for a lot of families in that oftentimes the parents don't see the family dynamic for what it is, or not because they're not looking or they're trying not to see it or anything like that, but the parents are the glue that holds it all together, and the dynamic naturally is going to shift when the glue comes out.
So true. And I don't think parents want to look at the family dynamics, because if they're not working, it's a reflection on their potential
on their
parenting.
Parenting, right.
Right.
Of course.
I would always encourage them to bring the entire family into the attorney's office and meet them. And usually the attorney, who's a
disinterested.
A disinterested third party, can kind of suss out who's going to be the troublemaker and and who's not. And then maybe coach the parents on how to set that up by looking at that.
It's a very interesting aspect of estate planning that I do think gets perhaps glossed over or overlooked by a lot of us.
Right.
I'm going to raise my hand and say I probably don't pay as much attention to it as I could.
Well, your job is to write the document, right?
Sure. But we got to get the client to, this is going to work for your family.
Right.
You know, ideally. That's why we're doing it.
Right.
We want it to work smoothly for the family. And I appreciate your input. That's very, very helpful.
Sure. I find a lot that families will appoint the bossiest controlling sibling as the executor. And boy, that just really leaves a bad taste in the mouth of all the other siblings usually. And, you know, I hear a lot of stories because people end up confiding in us.
Because you're there. And
we're there. It's a very tender time in their life.
Sure.
And we're handling some tender stuff for them. And yeah, it's not great. A lot of times we'll suggest a third party trustee.
Yeah, I think that's the best solution for almost every family. Many families are resistant to that.
Right.
Because they haven't seen a family explode like we have.
That is so true. Yeah. I have to think that I've been dealing with a family lately that had a very large estate of a sibling that passed. And we have had, there's 11 people involved, and there has not been one issue with anyone. And I am just so lucky and happy to see that.
Yeah.
It's not often.
That's rare.
It's not often that you get a family that just, they go with the flow. They're generous.
Mm-hmm.
They're,
mm-hmm.
you know, if two people wanted something, they both stood back and, well, no, you know, and they've all been very happy and pleasant. It's just been, it's lovely to nice. See that. So I know it's possible. It might be the only time in my career, but I know it's possible.
Just savor this time.
I'm savoring the moment.
Meg, in a typical estate organizing project, how much time does it take your company to get the project done?
That's a great question. So I'm going to go back to one of the words in your question, typical. There is no typical
right.
estate. So every estate has its own variables, right?
Yeah.
It has its own family structure. It has its own document that you have to follow. And it has its own set of assets that you're managing. Depending on what the document says and how long the person's been dead, depends on how long it takes us and then the contents of the house. So what we do is when we sit down and do our intake interview, we do talk to them about, well, what's your goal? Is the goal to eventually sell the house, or is the goal to clear it out so somebody else can move in it in the family? Or is the goal to figure out what everyone's going to get and they all have to come through and pick stuff out? Each one of those variables will add time. And then you add in the factor that maybe people don't live in the area or can't come out for work reasons. So if we are tasked in making an inventory, and we do photo inventory catalogs,
mm-hmm.
we put them online and then people from the East Coast can pick out their items online. It can take anywhere from, I think the quickest we've done a normal size 2-bedroom house that's not fully packed with East Coast relatives, shipping, et cetera, has probably been about a month.
Oh, that's quick.
Yeah, but we do get in there with 3 or 4 people for 3 or 4 days in a row every week.
Right.
Now, every time the trustee or the executor makes a change, that extends the time limit.
Sure, yeah.
And, or in a discovery process, We find something unexpected, and we have to have it appraised, and the appraisers aren't, nobody is available to appraise right. for a week or two.
So you have to step outside of your process, and
right.
that takes time.
Right.
Yeah.
Or it adds on, right? It adds on. We can continue with some of the other stuff, but we have to now, we have a whole nother path that we're following on specific items. So it can go as fast as a month if people make quick decisions. People aren't stalled emotionally in going forward.
Yeah. Everybody's available.
Everybody's available. Yeah. So
okay.
we are project managing a lot of different pieces, and we just keep going. We like to just keep going forward until we're done. We like to finish jobs.
Sure.
We like that. We love our job. We love what we do. It's fascinating. It's interesting. It is an honor, as we had said before, but the best part is
when it's done,
we love to start a job and finish a job. We all have that sense of satisfaction in finishing the job. So
yeah, that would be very satisfying for a job like that.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Meg, what do people do with family memorabilia?
Gosh, that's a fantastic question because it's in every home. It's different for every family. If there's family members left, we ask them to separate it out. If they all want a particular photo, we offer to get copies made for them and we split it up, or we'll offer to get things digitized. A lot of times we find that there's families that have no family. They had no children. There's no cousins left. There's no nieces or nephews. And they've left their entire estate to public institutions like their alma mater, the public library, the Humane Society. Those folks don't want their photos.
Right.
And usually we find that there's a lot of vintage photos in those types of estates because they've had their parents' photos because there were no other children. And
they just keep getting passed down.
It keeps getting passed down, and they're fascinating photos. So what we do at the Organized One is, depending on the estate, if it's something historical, we will try and get it to a historical place. Say it's in the city of Alameda, and it's about some of the founding places in Alameda or the early times of Alameda. There is a historical society, and we'll contact them and see if they want them. But oddly enough, people, strangers, buy vintage photos at estate sales.
Of people they don't know.
Right. They use them for either wall hangings or art projects.
Sure.
Or, you know, the next time you're in a restaurant and you see a bunch of old vintage photos, they are probably not related to anyone who owns that restaurant. They're probably bought at an estate sale.
Sure. Okay.
So we will always pool family memorabilia for clients. I come from a large family, so that's important to me particularly, but all of our team members are families and have families. So we really, it's important to us, and we will pull it aside and bring it to their attention. And if they don't want it, then we have the second choices of putting them in an estate sale or donating them to the East Bay Depot for creative reuse.
Sure.
Because people will reuse them there.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Meg, you have also very generously provided for our listeners a resource that you call a resource guide for estate organizing. And it's a document that's just full of really helpful information. I'm going to ask you to just kind of walk us through this and what all is there.
We like to help people by giving information out when we can. And it really is a business of helping. In this resource guide, you're going to find all sorts of links to places that will help you with your estate planning, your estate organizing, and your estate cleanouts. So, for instance, we start with estate planning professionals, and we list the National Association of Estate Planning Councils, which will list different councils in different areas of California, and who are members of those councils. So it's a good resource of finding your estate planning professional. But you already should have one, Kirsten Howe, because you're listening to this podcast. So just in case, that's another option. The other option is professional fiduciaries. And there's the Professional Fiduciary Association of California. And they are folks that can help you if you don't have family, or if you have somebody with a special needs that needs financial management later on in life. There's also estate organizers, and you can find that on National Association of Professional Organizers website, where you can find an estate organizer in your area by locating it by zip code and then by topic. So the other options that we have on the resource guide are places, if you're going to be doing this for yourself and your family, we really try and keep things out of the landfill, and we are a green-focused business. So we try and keep things in the donation stream when possible. What we usually end up finding is a lot of medical equipment. In the Northern California, we have a great couple of places that will recycle medical equipment and give it out to those in need that can't afford it. There's also a resource for hoarding, Alzheimer's, Clutterers Anonymous. If you have a veteran in your life, there's the Veterans Affairs Office and how to get your benefits through them, Social Security Administration, and then the recycling and waste disposals available to people in Northern California are also listed here, as well as places to donate, shred your paper, and the local auction houses. So if you don't live in this area, this is just a good list for you to do some research in your own area. Perhaps there's auction houses in your state that you want to use, but it's an idea starter for you to know that these are the things that you might be dealing with when you're handling somebody's estate, or you're trying to just get your estate in order and you're trying to be proactive and not leave a mess for your family. So please feel free to check this out on the podcast page. Also, you'll find it on our website. We're happy to answer any questions too you have about that going forward.
Thanks so much for sharing that. It's, if you go to the podcast page and see this resource, it's really just full of information. It's very generous of you to share kind of the tricks of the trade that you've accumulated over the years.
It is. It is. And as we had talked earlier, as far as donations go, they change all the time, and people will take different items on certain months and not on other certain months, depending on what they have in their inventory. And, you know, this is also a good thing to say about when there's major issues that happen in your area, like we're having a major fire issue. There's plenty of clothing, and so folks probably don't need clothing.
Oh, okay.
But there are places that you can call and ask what you can donate.
Right.
You know, mostly people need cash and gift cards
to buy things.
And food.
Right.
Yeah.
So call ahead.
Yeah, yeah. Call ahead. Always call ahead.
That's a good point. Again, that's going to be on our website, absolutetrustcouncil.com, on the podcast page within the show notes for this episode. You can find that resource guide for estate organizing. Thank you, Meg.
Thanks.
And now, here's our Ask Kirsten segment, where Kirsten answers questions from you, our listeners. Today's question comes from Susie in San Jose. Susie wants to know, what happens to my airline miles and my credit card rewards points after I die?
Thank you, Susie, for that question. What happens to those kinds of rewards or bonus points depends on the agreement that you have with that particular company. And you might not have necessarily signed an agreement, but by accepting the rewards or the points, you agreed to their fine print. So sometimes the airline or the credit card company will allow a family member or the person who inherits everything else to claim the points, but oftentimes the points and the miles just go away. So really, you have to check with the airline or the credit card company and find out what their policy is. Thanks for your question.
We love answering our listeners' questions here at Absolute Trust Talk. If you have a question you'd like to ask, just email it to info@absolutetrustcouncil.com. Thanks for listening.
Meg, this is the part of the episode where I like to kind of shift gears a little bit with my guest and talk to them about something more personal and not quite so business related. Although the thing I'm going to ask you about is kind of related to your business, but in a really interesting and fun way. When we were preparing for this episode, you shared with me that you actually are a TV star.
Wow.
Well, a television personality.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah. So talk to us about this television show you did a few years back.
I did a show in England called the Chaos Clinic, and chaos is short for can't have anyone over syndrome. So it was a tongue-in-cheek reality-based, skit-based show following the 12-step programs on how to get organized and stay organized so that you could have someone over to your house. And I went over and lived in England for 4 months, and we shot 8 episodes all over the country, all the way north, south, east, and west. And it was a blast, and it was quite interesting and life-changing for me, actually.
Oh, life-changing in what way?
I had never been to Europe.
Okay.
And I just packed my life up and went over there for a job that I'd had 3 phone conversations, 4 emails, and 1 contract.
Oh, so you really took a leap of faith.
I took a great leap of faith. And knowing that I was going to be representing my industry on the television was mind-boggling and frightening.
Sure, yeah. So the people on the show were actual people with real problems with the stuff in their house.
Yes,
They weren't actors.
There were actors on the phone. We had extras on the set all the time in the clinic days when we would go to the clinic and talk with the particular person whose episode it was. But they actually put ads out in the newspaper and online for people who needed their houses organized. And they went out and interviewed them. And, you know, there was different criteria that they chose people on. And one of the things that is interesting is they chose people on the size of their house. And the reason they did that is because houses in England are typically small.
Okay.
And you can't get a film crew.
You couldn't get the cameras in.
So they had to have at least enough room to be able to have 4 or 5 people in the room with enough space between the camera. So that was one of the criteria. But then the other was personality.
Uh-huh.
And they picked some really quirky, fun, interesting people with different personalities. It was a lot of fun.
Sure. Well, they wanted good television.
Right.
Yeah,
they did.
Yeah. Okay. And so you shot 8 episodes, mm-hmm. a full season.
A full season.
What's the name of it again?
The Chaos Clinic.
And you actually have those episodes on your website. Am I right about that?
I do have the episodes. All 8 are on the website. And you can go and watch them. And I always say it's good late night watching if you're needing to fall asleep. Because however, if people that know me say, oh no, because they love seeing the people they know on
sure,
camera.
Yeah.
The crew really liked the show, and they thought it was kind of a weird, quirky, cult-following type of show. And it was my first attempt at television. I had done theater, so it was an interesting learning experience working in the television industry. And it was a lot of fun. Some of the crew was great, and we would travel together because we would travel 2 or 3 hours out of London. Mm-hmm. And I took a lot of trains, and that was really cool.
Yeah.
It's a major transportation.
That's what they do over there.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I learned how to do that. I know my way all over London. I've been to every, you know, tourist destination in London on my off days. And the food isn't as bad in London as they say it used to be. It is quite expensive, though.
That's what I hear.
Yeah.
That is very interesting. So if anybody out there wants to watch these episodes, give us your website.
Our website is theorganizedone.com. Theorganizedone.com.
And it's right there on her website. She's got a button there called TV appearances.
It's under, right, it's like Meet the Team. So go down, you'll see my bio and then my credentials and my speaking engagements and television appearances. Send you to our YouTube channel.
Very nice. Thanks for sharing that. Meg, we're just about out of time, but if you have any final words of wisdom to share with our listeners, I'd love to hear it.
There's two things I want to say. I would say plan ahead, right?
Don't leave your you're speaking my language.
Don't leave your family with a mess, really. If you do love your family, start thinking about how you're going to leave and what you're going to leave behind. The second thing I'd like to say is that it's only stuff, and people might experience happier lives if they spent more time connecting with other people than connecting with stuff. The more stuff you have, the more time it takes to manage, and the less time you have for people.
And the more you have to worry about.
That's right.
That's such a brilliant observation. Thank you for sharing that. And thank you for being my guest. I really enjoyed it.
This was fun. I really enjoyed it too. Thanks, Kristen.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope you'll be able to catch our next episode when my guest will be Dori Sproul, who is a family care specialist with the Alzheimer's Association of Northern California. She has her office here in Lafayette, and she serves Contra Costa, Alameda, and Solano counties. And among other things, Dori's going to be talking to us about all the various resources that the Alzheimer's Association has available for families that are dealing with this disease. I saw her speak recently at a group that I belong to, and it's really very impressive how much there is available through the Alzheimer's Association, and I think a lot of people just aren't aware of that. So try to catch that episode, and thanks again for being here today, and I will look forward to connecting with you next time.
Thank you for listening to Absolute Trust Talk. If you loved this episode, head on over to iTunes to subscribe and leave us a review. Don't forget to visit our website, absolutetrustcouncil.com. where you can find a host of guidebooks and other tools to help you through the estate planning and estate administration process. If you need help securing your own legacy, then put your absolute trust in us. Give us a call at 925-943-2740 or email us at info@absolutetrustcouncil.com to set up your free consultation today.
This podcast is not meant to take place of legal advice from an attorney and does not create an attorney-client relationship. If you do have a legal question or issue, please consult with an attorney.